Hello and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the podcast for people who want to slow down, live a simpler life, and have realized that the world runs a little faster than that. My name's Brooke McCallery.
Do you change that every time?
Because I forget what it's meant to be.
Excellent. And my name is Ben McCallery. Welcome to episode 163, where you talk to the lovely Tish Oxenrider, who we've previously heard from, I'm going to say at least once before.
Once before.
Back in episode 16.
Close. 29.
Damn it.
I spoke to Tish back in October of 2015, actually. And that was maybe 2 or 3 months after her and her family had come back from their big year-long round-the-world adventure. So she and I spoke a lot about slow travel and, you know, what it kind of was like to live on the road. And interesting, I got the feeling when I spoke to her then that she was still very much in like a bumpy re-entry kind of phase.
It was the first time I've ever really heard of the term re-entry.
Yeah. And she and her family really kind of felt it pretty keenly, that sort of reverse culture shock of coming back to the States and settling down. But in the time since I've spoken with her, they've bought a house in a small Texas town, and they're renovating. So they're very much kind of in a home
mode.
In home mode at the moment. Mm. And so she and I talk about that re-entry a little bit, but also this idea of being both a passionate traveler and wanderer, and a homebody, someone who really craves roots and that sort of feeling of connection to a community, which interestingly is what her new book is about. So this book really kind of chronicles the 12-month-long journey that her and her family took around the world. And it's called At Home in the World. And I've got links to it over in the show notes. But it's this kind of duality of being a nomadic, wandering kind of person, someone who loves travel and experiencing other cultures, but also really craves that security and comfort of home. And that sort of forms the basis of where we kick off our conversation. But it's certainly done nothing to make me want to travel less, put it that way.
I got a kick out of reading the book just because one chapter is when they stayed at our place.
That's true.
And
she writes about my parents quite a bit.
Yeah, which is great. And you guys should read it too.
They should. It's a really fun book. Mm. And look, whether you're a traveler or whether you're an armchair traveler or whether you're someone who just kind of enjoys a good story, there's so many things to get out of Tish's book, as there is on her website too, where I contribute occasionally at theartofsimple.net. I will have, again, links to all of those in the show notes, which is over at slowyourhome.com/163. And I think we should get into it because it's a cracker of a conversation.
Enjoy.
Hi, Brooke. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm so glad to be talking to you. I realized this morning as I was writing out some notes, it's been a long time since we chatted. I felt like it was nowhere near this, but it was October 2015 that I had you on the podcast last, and that was actually the last time we had a conversation.
I know. That's so weird. I mean, it was a whole different house that I've lived in, a whole different stage of my work and what we were doing. So tons has happened since then, I feel like.
It has. I really want to talk about some of it. But I think last time we spoke, you weren't long home from your big kind of round the world trip. And in the interim, that has turned into a book. So congratulations, first of all, on the book being released, At Home in the World. It's beautiful, Tish. It's really beautiful.
Thank you so much. It was a very long process, as you just explained, because, yeah, we got back from our travels almost 2 years to when we're recording right now, which I cannot believe that it's been that long since we've been back home. And then just the writing process took so long that the fact that the book has just now released seems kind of insane because it feels like so much has happened since then. But the reason is because it was such a big, huge project, and I'm so happy with how it turned out that I'm glad it took that long. You know, I'm kind of a big believer in slow publishing and doing quality work over lots of work. And so I'm happy to have just this one really great book. And did you know, well, yeah, you know, your parents are in the book and you're kind of in the book too. So this, it's really fun to connect with people who are in the book, and it feels a little weird too. Like, I wrote about you.
Yeah, it was so funny. I showed mom and dad and they were just delighted. They really were.
Oh, good. I'm glad they weren't weirded out. No. You never know. I mean, of course, I would only write the best things about people, you know, in this. And your parents really did make quite a big impact on us, not only for the rest of the trip, the rest of our travels, because we only connected with them a few months into our big long trip, but lifelong too. I mean, we still talk about some of the things that honestly, and it wasn't that much, just a few minutes with them really impacted us. So they were great people.
They are good. They are good people. They're very good people. So, we spoke when you weren't long back, and I felt like at the time you were just, your head was still sort of spinning from the 12-month trip that you'd taken with your family. And what's the resettlement period been like for you? I know you've moved and you're going through a big project, but what's it been like?
Yeah, the re-entry part was a lot harder than the actual travel part. It was really interesting because, you know, we had friends that had done this round the world trip beforehand, and they told us in advance, try to stay out longer, as long as you can, because it's going to take you a while to get the hang of travel. And then before you know it, you're going to have to start landing the plane. And that plane landing part is so important to your overall well-being that if you just kind of descend too quickly, you're just going to be a mess. And we knew this going in, and, you know, we had lived overseas before, so we knew kind of what that was like to do what was called reverse culture shock, or to experience that. So we knew it was coming, but just knowing it's coming doesn't mean it's not going to happen. So it was a pretty bumpy reentry. A lot of it had to do with, you know, we were tired and ready to stop traveling, but we weren't necessarily ready to just go back to life as usual because we were different people. You know, travel changes you. And sometimes you're not aware of how it changes you until you just re-enter your life again and just kind of see through trial and error, like, oh, I'm not the same person I was. And I know you probably know what I mean because you've done some extended travel too. So it was a bit rough.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't traveled for that length of time, but you're absolutely right. You know, you might have a lot of kind of shifts in mindset and worldview as you travel, and then you come back different, but everything else feels the same and it doesn't quite fit right. You know, things feel a little, just a little tighter, a little uncomfortable, or yeah, it's really interesting to me to have to battle's the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Kind of work through that.
Yeah. And it feels kind of wrong because you think, what, this is my home culture. This is my language. These are, you know, I know how to grocery shop. I know where to go when. I have my friends here. So why does this not work anymore? It's kind of like when you wash a shirt in the wrong setting and it still works, but it's a little bit ill-fitting now. It feels kind of like that. Like, this is almost right, but not quite. And so in some ways, it's more disorienting than if you're going to a completely different culture and you just know it's going to be just a whirlwind experience. It's like, it just seems normal that it wouldn't be normal.
Exactly.
So yeah, coming back, I mean, I say all this like it's horrible, you know, it's almost 2 years now and we're fine and we're good and we're happy with where we are and we're glad we live where we live now, but it was definitely a rough reentry.
So one of the things that I love about the book, one of the many things is this really clear sort of duality that you open with, which is that you can be a wanderer, you know, someone who absolutely adores travel, but can also be a homebody. And I think that that's a really fascinating and powerful kind of thing to start the book with, because I think so often people are either painted as travelers or as homebodies, you know, and I often talk about travel, and a lot of people say, I'd love to travel, but I'm a real homebody. And I love that you just put it straight out there that you can be both. And you seem to go through periods of your life where you embrace the you know, the all-in kind of travel, and then that you embrace the being at home sort of period, as well as finding home while you're traveling, which is, you know, a whole other thing. But are you in a bit of a home stage at the moment?
Yeah, I guess you could say that because, you know, we bought an old 1935 cottage in Central Texas that needed help from the ground up. You know, every single thing from the bones to what you can actually see needed work. And so that's our current project. Instead of traveling, we're almost doing the opposite. We're staying put and working on deepening our roots in this place. And so it feels good. And it doesn't feel like it's a paradox to our traveling side either, but it used to. And I think that's what I experienced in our travels is this surprise that, like, wow, I'm a homebody and I'm a wanderer, and it's actually okay. And in some ways, it's two sides of the same coin. And the reason the book ended up being about that really was, well, first of all, I didn't even know that's what I learned until I came back. That's kind of my process anyway. I don't go in thinking this is what the trip is going to teach me. I just kind of let it happen. And it turned out my travels taught me about home and what it means. But the other thing is I would walk down the travel aisle of a bookstore and notice that every book was about these people who just kind of ran away from a quote, ordinary life, you know, job, work, kids, whatever. And to me, that just settled funny because it gives this message of you either need to be one or the other. You either need to be this person who, you know, just loves living in the slow lane and just parking and living just fully where you are, or you love to wander and explore all these new cultures. And I'm like, I'm both people. Yeah. I am equally both. And I think something needs to be said about that. And so that's why the book is about that, because that's what I learned and that's who I am.
Yeah. I think that's so incredibly important because people often feel like that extended travel or even just that deep, slow travel, which doesn't have to take a long time, is kind of closed to them because they're not that kind of person. And I think it's awesome that you're encouraging people to be both. You know, you can absolutely be both. So I'm curious, with the renovation to your house, I mean, that's a slow project in and of itself, having been through it myself. How are you finding that after kind of constantly being on the move for almost a year to this period of putting roots down?
It depends on the day. You know, some days I've got the itch really badly and I just think, oh, if I have to look at one more, you know, whatever piece of drywall, I'm going to scream. I just want to go run to the airport and just buy a ticket to the first place out. But I also am really enjoying it. It feels really good to commit to being someplace. You know, I think part of that also has to do with before our travels. My husband Kyle and I had never lived anywhere in our married life longer than 3 years somewhere. So a lot of it has to do with that side of us too, that we're saying with this fixer-upper, no, we're here. This is going to be our home base. This is what the kids will remember when they think of home when they were a kid. So that part feels really good. I think the other thing that was interesting about our travels is learning a lot more of how we work and operate, meaning Kyle and I in our day-to-day life. And Kyle had before this done screen work for his job. You know, he was looking at a screen like a lot of us do for a large chunk of his day. And he had realized on this trip how much he missed working with his hands again. He used to be a contractor and a builder, and he realized how much he loved doing that and that that was a core part of who he was, and that some of that went missing whenever he changed kind of professions. And so when we came back, we basically committed to moving him into a different career path. And so even though he still does work for me from time to time, it's a lot more now on the house. And so for me, it's been really enjoyable to watch him do that again. You know, I think as great as it is to be a digital nomad and to be able to work from anywhere from a laptop, there's also something great about like actual tangible work with your hands and being, you know, creating something that you can touch and feel. And that's what this house is for him. So that's been nice for us.
I think that's really, really beautiful. And you touch on an interesting point. I had a conversation with a woman yesterday about the digital nomad kind of thing and how it's often thrown up as part of the finding your purpose sort of journey. You know, in order to find your purpose, you need to throw in your job and kind of travel the world. And you did travel the world and work at the same time. Is it as kind of glamorous as some people would have us think to travel and work at the same time?
I mean, I will say yes and no. And when I say yes, it's not so much the work itself that's glamorous. It's the what you get to do because you can take your work anywhere. So, you know, it is actually fun if you kind of step outside yourself a little bit and you think, oh my gosh, I'm doing my work from a coffee shop in Thailand. That's really cool. Or Earlier today, I got to, you know, whatever, hike around in the Alps, and now I'm back just doing my work. What a great job I have. But at the same time, it's not glamorous at all, to the point of there is some challenges to doing this kind of work. The finding internet becomes such a pursuit in your life whenever you have to take your work with you that you kind of get annoyed at your own self. Like, oh my gosh, I wish I could just enjoy being here instead of trying to find, you know, internet. And I have to say, like, maybe it's gotten better in the few years since I've been there, but in Australia, it was surprisingly hard to find decent Wi-Fi.
It is so bad. People don't believe me when I say that. And I often, we have like a decent modem. We have regular internet connection at home. I still have to tether to my phone in order to make Skype calls because it's so bad. And in public, it's virtual. And it's just sitting at a coffee shop they've got like their password on the wall somewhere. It's virtually impossible. It's impossible. People really don't.
I was really surprised.
Yes.
No, I know. And so I would plan for places that I just kind of assumed internet would be bad. Like there was a month or so that we were in East Africa and I knew that it would be a challenge there. So I purposely planned my work to not have major projects and stuff like that. But then I just kind of thought Australia, France is another place that has really horrible Wi-Fi, that it would be fine. And it turned out it wasn't. And it was a lot of frustrations. And then the flip side is you would be surprised by some great internet. Like Croatia has fantastic Wi-Fi. Who would have thought? And so it was so fun to get to work there and to just enjoy being in coffee shops and be around other quote digital nomads because other people were there working. It's like, who knew? I had no idea.
That's very cool. I like the idea of like these kind of hubs of people sort of sitting in a coffee shop in some cool place, working for a few hours and going off and exploring. I mean, I have to say that it appeals to me beyond anything, you know, but I really like, we've spoken about this before.
It is really nice about this day and age that we could do this. I mean, this is stuff our parents would have never dreamed of, you know, so it's pretty great.
Exactly. Someone said to me the other day, oh, so you're a person whose job didn't exist 5 years ago.
I guess I am. I know. There's no pattern for this kind of work, you know, and so therefore we don't know what the future is like either. And so in some ways it's a lot of like just taking advantage of what you have right now. And that's one of the reasons we went when we did. It's like, we don't know if we'll be able to do this forever. So let's do it now while we can.
And your kids were like a really great age, I feel like, for doing this kind of trip too. I mean, they, kids at that age, so how old were they? Were they 10, 9, 6 and 4 or something when you went?
Yeah, they were 9, 6 and 4 when we started, and then they had birthdays on the trip. But it was a great age because they were still young enough to not be too tethered to commitments and things like that. Like my daughter is now 12, and I would even say there's some changes that I see that would make it a little more challenging now. Not impossible, just different. And yet they were old enough to be able to carry their own backpacks. We didn't deal with diapers, which is, you know, a huge thing for us. And so it was a great little window of time for us to go.
And I feel like at that age, what the kids want most is to be with you. You know, they just mm-hmm. hang out together. I feel,
That's a great way to put it. Exactly.
Yeah. How did they adjust to being back in the States and back in kind of quote unquote regular pattern of life?
Well, in some ways they adjusted great because they were missing regular life. You know, close to the end of the trip, they would start talking about just wanting, you know, the sort of creature comforts that they would remember, certain types of food or certain things that were in waiting for them in storage. And so initially they were really eager to get back into that. And I could understand that. And especially on our trip, we noticed that a lot of our slower ordinary days were their favorites. Like honestly, being at your house in Australia, that was a highlight for them because it's so funny. Like they will talk about your chickens and your trampoline. And it's so funny because it's like, but you know, like the week before we did the Great Barrier Reef, but to them, no, the trampoline in the backyard. And so that was a life lesson for us too, about like, what is life really about, or what really matters in life. So they reacclimated just fine. But I will say that they do get the itch to go wander and explore. And whenever days get kind of monotonous, they do kind of ask us like, so what are we going to go do? You know? And we have to remind them that just because we don't always need to have some major event of the day to make it a good day. So it's kind of like all of us though, right? I think that too sometimes. I have to remind myself of that just as much as I have to remind them.
Exactly. You know, there is comfort and there is niceness in that sort of same rhythm over time. And I think it's also important because my kids are the same, I'm the same, to understand that we don't need some grand adventure in order to have an adventure either. You know, you could go somewhere different for the day and really just spend time in a park and kind of get to know a place. We went exploring last weekend and found a little town like an hour from where we live that we'd never really spent any time in, and it was just wonderful to kind of wander the street. Like, you can do things that sort of soothe a little bit of that itchiness without having to take off on big adventures. Have you found that you're more inclined to do things like that since you've been back?
Yeah. Like, one of the reasons we moved where we did, because, you know, our first year, and when I talked to you last, we were just renting a house in Austin where we knew, just out of a lack of not knowing where we wanted to settle. But now we've moved to a small town just outside of Austin. And that was on purpose because it's a very walkable town and we live right off the town square, and we wanted to live in a place where we felt not so much like we were on vacation, but a place that we would intentionally dig into and explore and get to know really well and participate in. And so in some ways we still feel like we're, I can't think of the right word besides vacationing, but in our own town. And then there's lots of just small little towns in what would be considered Central Texas that we have since done that I don't think, you know, I grew up here and I don't think I really did that often. So we're trying to incorporate that a lot more in our lives. When it had been about 9 months since we got back and we were all just feeling really kind of beat up by kind of why we were back and feeling a bit despondent about not having the trip in our lives anymore, we just took a day off and we pulled the kids out of school and we just drove. It was wildflower season here. And they were just in full bloom and it was beautiful. And we just spent the day wandering around looking at wildflowers. Kids brought their sketchbooks and their paints, and we just painted wildflowers along the side of the road. And then we went and ate barbecue at this new restaurant, and it was just so fun. And that was exactly what we needed for the day. Yeah. You know, we didn't need a huge vacation. We just needed to get out of our routine for the day. It made all the difference.
Exactly. And I think, honestly, sometimes that's it. You know, we get that kind of heaviness to our days, and that's when I start to look at like airplane tickets and, you know, think about places to go, which is totally fine and I do that anyway, but that's when I start to feel the absolute need for it. And instead, you know, just taking off on that day adventure or this kind of unplanned time and just seeing what happens, which I think is interesting because we can only do that to a certain extent because we've allowed for space in our lives, you know. And I think that this is where things like simple living and slow living start to cross roads with travel and things like that. Not necessarily because you have to be a big traveler in order to kind of fit into that mold, but you are able to have those experiences and take those adventures because you've left space or you've left flexibility in your days. Do you find that there is a relationship between living simpler and, you know, being more open, I guess, to those sorts of experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a lot about having enough white space in your life to be curious. Mm. Like, you know, to have enough mental space and enough time in your routine to allow yourself to take the posture of being, I guess, what I would call a lifelong learner, where you let yourself be curious enough to just be spontaneous or just go finally figure out what it is that you were wondering, you know, like, you know, what is the wine like in Central Texas? I've heard a lot about it. I've never gone. Let's just go visit a vineyard. That whenever you're not encumbered by, well, but we've got the whole house to clean because we live in a huge house, or especially for us when it comes to time and kids, especially as our kids get older, I feel like there's more pressure to have more on your plates to, you know, well, we've got this kind of rehearsal and this kind of practice and this kind of after school activity. Whenever we leave a lot of space in our calendar, we can just say, you know what, guys, let's hop in the car. Let's go to this one town 2 hours away. We're just going to spend the day there and let's just hang out and check things out. And we could really only do that because we're leaving that white space in our lives, both in the calendar and just mentally.
Yeah, exactly. Now, do you have any ways that you do deal with that? Because I feel like if we're not vigilant, our time can very quickly become other time, you know, because like you said, you've got kids' activities, social engagements, all that kind of stuff. How do you kind of manage the balance between time for yourselves, time for your family, and also not doing it things.
For, yeah, my the fi- The favorite tool I have in my arsenal is the word no, you know, saying no ruthlessly and not feeling guilty about it. You know, that whole idea of essentialism being 99% of the stuff of life that just doesn't really matter. And a lot of it is just knowing what that is. And so for us, it's somewhat trial and error. We've learned over the years, Kyle and I are both introverts. And so it sucks the life out of us if we have too many activities on our calendar. And, you know, where we live is this great small town, but still most of our friends are in Austin. And so just dealing with traffic and coming into town and having to pay the money to drive, it's just not worth it. And so we purposely do things like keep at least, I want to say, 4 days a week with nothing on the calendar if we can help it. Now there are seasons when that happens, you know, end of school years or holidays where it just tends to happen. But for the most part, actually act like on the calendar, there's something there if the other 3 days a week, for example, have commitments already. And so that for the most part, we can either stay home and just do our home life stuff, which we all enjoy. We all enjoy just the downtime of nothingness, or we can be spontaneous, like we said, and just go and spend the day at the watering hole. And that to us is doing something, you know, so it's a lot of just thinking through that white space as a commitment and not just extra time to fill up until there's nothing left, you know, but to guard it preciously with the word no.
Yeah, exactly. And I think no is interesting. It's something that I've been practicing a lot the last kind of year or two. This year, I don't usually do New Year's resolutions or anything, but my friend Kelly talks about doing having a word for the year or a theme for the year. And this year, my theme is no. And it's been so great to just have permission to do that and to you've got strategies to do it so that you don't sound like a jerk, but you know, it to be okay with saying no and to be okay with what the consequences of that are, which I've got to say are largely very positive. but it's something that a lot of us struggle with.
It is, yeah. I think the easiest way to do it is to think through, like, what would be the consequences if I said yes to that? And if it's not something you really want, then it's a no,
exactly.
You know?
Particularly if you're looking at things that have sort of a long lifespan. I mean, I don't like to think that I'm withholding things from my kids, but if they want to play a sport that they're not super passionate about, but you know all their friends are playing it, and there's training 3 nights a week and games that travel on the weekend, like, really, you know, is that what we're going to do in order to, like, we're going to miss out on days at the beach, we're going to miss out on camping, we're going to miss out on all these other things, you know? And I think you're right. I think it's really important to truly question that rather than just, you know, say what seems easier at the time.
Right. And just to know what you're about and to know what you value. We value that downtime more than those other things. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking a lot on the podcast about figuring out our personal values and how to have them impact our choices in day-to-day life. And I think that that's a piece that's missing for so many of us for a long time. I know it was for me. I didn't know what I stood for. So I kind of said yes to everything in an effort to fill a gap or feel something. I'm not sure what exactly it was, but once I started to figure out what we did value, and as you said, you guys discovered that you're introverts over time, Ben and I have discovered the same thing. Once we know things like that about ourselves, it makes it much simpler, not necessarily easier, but simpler to say no, I think. And you've got a reason, you've got something to fall back on, you've got your foundation of why. And I find that's really helpful.
That's right. I agree.
Yeah. So I wanted to go back to your house and the work that you're doing on it. Have you, I guess, changed your view of what home looks like or your requirements of a home as a result of your travels? I mean, have you, because I know when we go camping, for example, I'm always surprised and delighted by how little we need to get by and be comfortable and be happy. And then I come home and it feels like even though we don't have a whole heap of stuff, it feels full. Did you really rethink your home and the way that you're building your home and creating it and the things that you kept when you got home as a result?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We, in this process, we're living in the renovation project. So that means that a lot of our stuff is in a storage unit right now. And what we have in our home currently is basically the essentials, you know, the things that we really need to get by just to make day-to-day living here doable. And I was just telling Kyle the other day, you know, that stuff that's in there, I almost don't even remember what's in there. And you and I both, I know y'all aren't big into clutter. We're not into clutter either. We have pared it down to where we don't have a lot of stuff, but even still, it's just been a reminder of like, gosh, we really don't need much stuff, do we? And so I was telling Kyle, it's almost like, I hope it catches on fire and then I don't even have to look at it because I literally don't remember some of the stuff. And every now and then one of the kids will say, hey, where's that? Game or toy or book. And then we'll say, oh, it's in storage. And we'll say, oh, you know, and we'll keep a little list of the next time one of us goes to the storage unit to get these little things here and there. But other than that, it's just not necessary. So the trip, one of the best parts, you know, some people ask kind of almost negatively, like, how hard was it to only have a backpack? But for me, that was one of my favorite parts. I loved living out of a backpack for a year. And yeah, there were some limitations and I had to learn a lot about capsule wardrobes and making the most of my three shirts and three bottoms and that kind of thing. That was a challenge and that did get tiring. But the way I would handle that is just replacing, you know, I would get something new, especially when the climate changed and it was all fine. It was such a good reminder and kind of a big illustration for me is when we left, I packed a pen in my supplies. You know, I had my clothes and my office stuff and just personal stuff. And so I had a pen with my journal and I remember thinking to myself, well, I wonder how long it'll be till I lose this. And then I have to buy another pen, you know, in China or New Zealand or wherever we are. Well, I kept track of that pen, that one silly ballpoint pen that, you know, meant nothing the entire time we were gone. Like we came back and I still had the same pen. And it wasn't like a week later coming back here that I lost it. And to me, it had to do with just unpacking life and being back to, quote, you know, just normal. And I realized, okay, when you just have fewer things, you take better care of them,
yes.
You know? And so I would think about like, I don't want to not have a pen. So I'd always make sure I just had it in my backpack with me. And it was such a good life lesson about how little we need. And then the fact that when we have fewer things, we take better care of them.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I often think about it as like the story of the hair elastic, you know, the hair tie. You might buy a packet of 100 and they disappear in like a month. And then you hold on to that last hair tie for a good 2 years. So when you're down to the last, you really do keep track of things.
It's so true. That's hilarious and a good one too. I do that. Oh my gosh.
Now, you mentioned that you guys chose intentionally to live in the small town that you're in. Did you, were you, when you were traveling, I don't, even in the back of your mind, just taking note of the kind of places that you enjoyed living? Because Ben and I are having this conversation at the moment about, you know, the fact that we're sort of suburban, you know, in the mountains, but it's pretty suburban. And we'd love to, I guess, live in a place for 3 or 6 months that was very walkable, like small town kind of situation, and then also try and do the slow living thing in an urban city kind of environment, or somewhere that I don't know, had all the amenities that were on offer. I think because there's so many benefits to all those different ways of doing life depending on what you want from the place that you live. Were you keeping a wish list of the sort of things that you wanted in a town while you're away, or paying attention to that?
Yeah, you know, we feel the same way. Either urban or small town are our favorites. And, you know, part of our trip, this was sort of a third or fourth reason we were traveling, not the main one, but kind of we always kept in the back of our minds was, could we live literally in any of these places? Because at the time, we realized, you know, we can live anywhere. Why don't we consider anywhere? You know, we love lots of places around the world. And it's not that it would be easy to just pick up and move to a new country, but it's a lot easier than it used to be. And so we thought, let's actually consider that. And so at the beginning of the trip, we were considering places like, you know, that we know some expats who live in Chiang Mai, Thailand. We know some people who live in, you know, in Croatia. And so we thought maybe we could do that. But whenever we realized soon after that, okay, that's not really the point of this trip, we might discover some kind of hidden gem, but really we need to think more about like how do we want our days to look like? Like instead of this big, huge sweeping, you know, what do we want our life to be about? That's important too. But a lot of the question, boiled down to is how do we want our days to be? They are best spent for us personally in either a small town or a big city. And the reason I realized this was one of my friends, Kristen Kill, she used to live in Manhattan. And the way she described it is, even though it's one of the biggest cities in the world, it's actually small town living because you just live in your neighborhood. Like 99% of your day is spent walking just to the same few places, the same stores, the same schools, the same whatevers. And that's a small town. She was saying New York City is just basically a whole bunch of small towns. And whenever she put it that way, I was like, that's exactly right. I want small town living, whether that's in the middle of downtown Austin or whether that's in a town outside of Austin. I think where we were feeling both Kyle and I just sort of depleted was in that in-between space for us. And that's not to say everybody feels that way. This is just us. And I think that's important that I'm not like shaming people who choose to live in the suburbs. That's totally fine. But for us personally, walkability was so important to us that we were willing to do either one. And it came down to a small town simply out of the practicals. It was cheaper, more affordable. We could live the way, you know, actually travel more because we weren't putting so much money into a house. Whereas if we lived in downtown Austin, I mean, the same way with if you lived in downtown Sydney, it would cost so much that you couldn't do anything else. So for us, that's why we went with small town. And it feels so right to be here. You know, I mean, it's not perfect. And we still have to, there are other trade-offs. We have to drive into town more than we'd like. But the day-to-day living is exactly how we want to live, that it's worth it for us.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. There's often the big picture, like which city, which country do I want to live in? Which, you know, what do I want life to look like in that big kind of 30,000 foot view? But it is the day to day. Like it's those decisions where you walk outside, you're like, oh, I've got to get in the car just to go and get some milk. That's, you know, that might have more of an impact on the way you feel in your home and where you live. It's definitely something that's really important to question, I think. In terms of community, I know you spoke, you wrote in the book about, I guess, your desire and your ability, and I think the kids also help with this, but to become part of a community really quickly. And I think that often it takes people a long time to find their place in a community. How did you guys sort of settle in and find your feet in that regard in such a short period of time in some of the places that you stayed?
Well, you know, a lot of it is a different definition of community when you travel, you know, because I would argue that the long term, like where your real community is where you know and are known. Mm-hmm. That's my shorthand answer of what is community. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's where we are now and where we're taking the time. But the kind of more temporary version of knowing and being known has a lot to do with just being curious again and being willing to, I guess, travel slowly in a sense, but I don't mean that in a how much time you spend in one place. I just mean in more the posture you take. We realized early on that we do not like to travel with a bucket list in mind because that bucket list will never be fully checked off. And so we just decided we're not even going to try. And yes, of course, we're going to hit up some spots when we're near them and when they're really important to us. But, you know, if we went to, for example, southern France and decided we were primarily here to see as much as we can of southern France, we would not only get just exhausted and would that cost a lot more money, but we would miss out on some of the real life part of what it means to live in southern France. And the real life part of that is community. Yeah. And so we chose to stay in this kind of nondescript small little village where we, you know, we spent a month there, but even if we were only there a week, we would spend our days not necessarily trying to see all the things. We would spend them a lot more going to things like the markets or the nearby cafe by asking the locals, you know, where's a good place to get coffee instead of, you know, looking up in the guidebook and it turns out it's like a couple miles away. So you're going to go hit that. It's a lot more of just taking the posture of looking around you, being a learner and seeing what the locals do and just being part of that. And so community just came from, you know, looking people in the eye and spending time in the markets, shopping for groceries instead of always eating out, because then you're living more like they do and you're kind of figuring out sort of the lay of the land. So it's a lot of those little daily choices of how you travel more than what you see and do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I love doing things like going to the library at a place that we stay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I find that really grounding, and you know, grocery shopping and all that kind of thing. And when I talk about slow travel, people often say, but I don't have the time to do that. You know, I don't have a month. We've got a weekend, or we've got 3 or 4 days. And I think that it's, again, it's not the length of time that you stay there. It's not even necessarily the speed at which you move through a place, but it's the mindset and the way that you absorb a place. You know, sitting in a locals kind of coffee shop, or going to the grocery store, going to the library and the markets, that kind of thing. You immerse yourself in a real community. Even as you say, you may not have the time to become a part of that community in the know and be known kind of sense, but you can become a part of the community for a moment. And I think there's something really important about that, I think, you know, in terms of connection and humanity and all of that kind of stuff. For me, it's one of the biggest pleasures of traveling, I think, and why we always try and stay in communities, in like places that people live, rather than sort of separated out in a resort or something like that.
Right. I mean, I think the reason it's so important is because that's how we're wired. It's how we're made. You know, we're just, human beings aren't made with the capacity for handling like extraordinary events again and again and again. You know, we actually, to function and to feel more human, we need those small downtime. We need lots of sleep. We need rest. And so that's why it feels so right, and why it's so important, is because that's actually how we're hardwired. And to do otherwise just means burnout and, yeah, missing out on the better stuff that we're just whizzing by to go see some amazing monumental thing instead.
And you take a photo and you turn around and you go home.
Right.
And it's so funny. I've found myself in situations where I'm like, we're going to go do this, like this bucket list thing. And you go and you take a photo and you leave, and it's kind of almost deflating. There are things that I've seen, obviously, that have just blown my mind. You know, Milford Sound in New Zealand, Grand Canyon. Like I knew that they would be beautiful. I did, but I didn't know how beautiful. But you kind of, and with those exceptions sort of removed, there's often okay, well, I've done that now. Now what next? You know, and it's a funny thing to kind of experience when you've built this up in your mind as something massive that you need to tick off a list.
Right.
Now, I wanted to ask you before we finish, I'm often, very frequently actually, asked about how to encourage older kids, you know, kind of teenager-ish age, to either adopt or get on board with simple living. And I know that your daughter is 12 now. So I wanted to ask you, what's your approach for encouraging and helping them sustain a simpler kind of outlook on life as they grow up, and potentially as pressures of peers and that kind of stuff become more prevalent in their life?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny to be thought of as a parent of older kids, because it's like I blinked and it's like, how did that happen? And in some ways, I'm still learning, because, I mean, my daughter is 12, but she's also only 12. So, you know, I'm still figuring that out. So if I listen to this 5 years from now, I might just like shake my head and laugh like, oh, what you didn't know. But I know. But yeah, you know, it's interesting, as she gets older, it's a new set. It's not so much easier or harder. It's just exchanging a set of issues for another set of issues. And what used to be a lot more just black and white, like we don't have much stuff and we're only going to have, you know, this many toys or whatever it is that is a little bit more with the younger kids. Now it's a lot more nuanced and about relationships. And so the thing that I am learning, and I hope this is continuing to be true, is the reason my daughter Tate, she actually does, I would say, live a simple life for her age and also enjoys it. And the reason, I think, is because we had a really open relationship leading up to that. And so it was all those years of, you know, when we first lived in Turkey and she was 2 years old, all the way to even the trip when she was 9 and 10, we just talked a lot about what does it mean? Not so much like in a very literal, like, now we're going to have a lesson about what it means. You know, it was just a lot more of talking about our why we're choosing to do things, you know, like, so, you know, we only have one car. We know a lot of kids your age have, you know, their families have two cars, but we're choosing to only have one car simply because, we can, you know, we both work from home and so we're doing that instead so that we can have more money to travel, just so you know, or whatever. Or, I even talk through my shopping decisions. I'm at a store and I'll say something about, like, you know, this is a really cute shirt. I like it a lot, but this store isn't really well known for being ethical in its practices. And they also just kind of wear out really soon. So I'm going to save my money and spend it on one shirt at this other type of store instead of three from here, you know, and but not in a big, like, I'm going to teach you a moral lesson here. It's just more like talking through my decision. So now it's not this weird topic when it comes to these like little issues of life that have to do with the big game plan of simple living. And yet it's also not to say we've got it figured out. She is still, she'll ask to do things that we have to say no to, you know, and that's just part of who it is. You know, we'll be at a store and we'll just say, nope, we don't need that. Or we're not going to do this activity because it's just too much for our family at large. And, you know, and she'll understand, but she also gets it. Like it's now at an age where you can reason. That doesn't mean she's going to like it, but she at least understands the words you were saying, you know? And so that's kind of our approach now, is we're still continuing to talk about it, but just kind of in a more like, I think the other thing that really helps at this age is for them to see how you, I don't want to say struggle with it, but how it's a continual part of your life as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like she'll see that, oh, I would love to do this, but I'm not going to, even though it's kind of a bummer, or we're going to choose to do this and not this, or whatever it is, that it's not always easy for me as well. And that it's a journey and not like a checklist project. You know, I've finished, we now live simply. That's right. It's an ongoing process. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of fun actually, because I feel like we can now have real and deep and meaningful conversations and kind of also not take it so seriously. You know, we can laugh about some things. And so she's done really well. You know, she keeps her room clean and she doesn't have too much stuff, and she asks to declutter a lot and, you know, gives me things to give to the thrift store, and she takes good care of the things she does have. And I think it's just a lot of that building blocks from earlier, you know. And I mean, I say this now, my middle guy is 9 and I can see it being very different with him. So you might want to ask me in a few years and I'll say, oh, yeah. So that was her personality. This is a different story, well, you know?
That's the other thing, you know, because some kids are collectors. Some kids, like, get a real sense of security from their stuff and they don't want to let it go. And, you know, some kids are super into things and they have that kind of collector's gene, I guess. Yeah, so I definitely think, just looking at my two kids, there would be different, and there already is, different approaches, you know, like the why, you know, behind decisions works for one of them, whereas it's just boundaries work for another, you know, work for the other. So it's, yeah, I think that's really so helpful. I know a lot of people will, I think, find comfort in the fact that there is no hard and fast, you know, rule or approach that's going to work for everyone. And it's also like a very fluid thing, I think, like it is for adults as well. It is a really fluid thing to say, I'm going to simplify life. And then you're like, well, what does that look like? And it's a constant daily making of choices and decisions, and sometimes making mistakes and recognizing them and moving on anyway. And yeah, I think that's going to be very comforting. So thank you.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That was good. So Tish, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for writing your book. Thank you for putting my parents in your book. That was
Well, thank you for their hospitality again and for yours.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was great. Someone fed the chickens, watered the garden. It was awesome. And yeah, thank you for your time today. It's been too long between chats, but it's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.